first of all, I really do appreciate, because I know how much, you know, the people in the Boulder area really did respond very well, and that concern and that commitment, that caring, matters so much, and it's been deeply appreciated, I think, by the people of Nepal. When I was there in March, they were heartfelt in their thanks to all the folks in America, but those communities in particular that really stepped up and said, how can we help? One of the critical things that we have to remember, though, is that even as we are trying to meet the very compelling human need that remains, there's still tremendous shortfalls in housing. Hundreds of thousands of homes were destroyed. Thousands and thousands of schools were destroyed. And we were very fortunate that this was on a Saturday, otherwise the earthquake occurred. Otherwise, the tragedy would have been so much greater, because many, many children would have died in that quake, many more. But I will say this, when I was ambassador, one of the things that we focused on was earthquake preparedness as well, because I went to Nepal right after the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. 234,000 people died in Haiti. President Obama said, no more Haitis. We aren't capable of keeping the earth from moving, but we are capable of working together to save lives now. And as much as this outpouring of support after the quake was a good thing and deeply appreciated, if we truly care, the time we should act is now, when we can save lives before the next quake occurs. So even as we work on responding to the quake, and again, that work remains to be accomplished, there's so much to be done yet, we also have to continue the efforts to prepare for the next quake. In Nepal, only 14 districts were affected out of a total of about 35. But we know that the other 21 districts, and even those that were affected by the most recent quakes, we have to continue in those areas the work of preparedness to make sure that we don't have a similar tragedy the next time around. So that's part of what we're doing at Sorway. We not only are trying to help with the response effort that's still ongoing, but we're also trying to build the partnerships that will let us prepare to save lives in the next go-around. And I know that makes a difference, because I know that the work that we did during my time as ambassador resulted in lives being saved in this earthquake. But there's so much more we need to do on the preparedness front.
And so what can be done? I mean, when you're talking about making this a more resilient country for the next earthquakes, as you are rebuilding, mm-hmm. how does that manifest itself?
Well, first of all, in the rebuilding effort, of course, it's using the right technologies. And that doesn't mean that it has to be all this, you know, tremendously sophisticated, import new materials and all the rest. There are even traditional building techniques that work extremely well in terms of seismic safety, if done right and if maintained. And we've got partners on the ground who know how to do this and who are doing this. We worked very closely with the Nepal Society for Earthquake Technology, which is a nonprofit in Nepal that we had partnered with as the U.S. Embassy. And the schools that they've retrofitted, the homes they've helped build, they stood. So we've got to make sure we're working with the right partners and building in the right way, first of all. But equally, the education piece is so critically important. Many people would look at this and say, oh, there's nothing I can do. In Nepali, they would say, Ke Garne, what to do? And they'd say, we're all going to die in the earthquake. We, through education and empowerment with information, we were able to show people that there were many things they could do to make their home safer. Take the water tank off the roof of the house and put it below ground. That alone can save many lives, because those tanks will come crashing through the house and fall on people and they die. We showed them all sorts of things, and I will tell you that we had over 500 Nepalese who worked for the American Embassy in Nepal. We did not lose a single one of them in the earthquake. Not because we went and retrofitted or repaired their homes, because we couldn't do that with U.S. taxpayer money, but we could educate them and empower them with the information they needed to make good choices, to make their family safer. And they did it. They made those choices. And it tells me that, you know, when we don't lose a single one of them in the quake, it says to me that this sort of effort can yield results. So So the education and the awareness building is another critical part of it, as well as building effectively. We also have to, though, help to grow this economy. If we want it to be more resilient next time, people need the resources. And in growing the economy, we're looking at things like tourism, you know, which was the backbone of the economy, and which was hit very hard, of course, by the quakes. And that ties in then to this Wounded Heroes Trek of Hope that we are sponsoring as part of this fundraising effort on this Empower Nepal tour. And it's now, we now have the support of the United Nations in this endeavor. And it holds great promise, I think, for both helping to stimulate economic growth, help to create jobs. People with jobs can then take the steps that they need to make their homes safer, because we can't wait for government to do it all. And this is the challenge.
Well, I know within the Wounded Heroes Trek of Hope and also the broader work of the organization Soarway, I mean, you're supporting the Nepalese people in general, which as a result of the earthquake are a vulnerable population. But within that wider population, there are groups that are even more vulnerable, people with disabilities and particularly children, those who've been orphaned and who are now vulnerable to sex trafficking. Talk a little bit about those communities and how there are even more vulnerable groups within a broad vulnerable population.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you raised all those communities, because we're working in all those areas, it turns out. We're, you know, the children who were orphaned in the quakes, one of the most important things we can do for them is to try to find mechanisms to allow them to stay with family, with extended family, rather than to have to go into institutions. And so we are partnering with a tremendous organization called the Nepal Youth Foundation in Nepal. Worked closely with them as ambassador. I have tremendous respect for them. And we have a program with them to support earthquake orphans. And for $350 a year, for example, we can keep a child with their extended family. It's not that we have to pay the family, per se, to take the child in, but in a country that is so poor, the burden on that family becomes extremely great. And just to pay school fees, to keep the child educated and growing to become a citizen who can participate in the future of the country, is hard. But for $350 a year, we can help to ease the challenges for those families. We can keep them together and give children a chance to stay with their aunties or their granny and grandpa or whomever it may be. And so we're committed to working on that effort. But we also recognize, as you said, Maeve, that especially young women and girls, some as young as 6 years old, are very vulnerable to being trafficked into sexual bondage. And we know that these predators look at these earthquake-affected areas in particular, and they descend upon them, and they lure these girls with false promises. They mislead the parents, and it's a tragedy. And we've been working very, very closely with an organization called Maiti Nepal, and their founder, Anuradha Kairwala, was the CNN Hero of the Year in 2010 for her efforts to both protect these girls, to rescue them, to help them rebuild their lives. We worked closely with them as an embassy, and I'm honored as Soarway to be partnering with them as well. And, you know, this also goes to the prevention argument. The time to address these things, right now we have to, of course, again, respond to the need that was related to the earthquake. But we have to remember that if we want to protect these girls in the next disaster as well, we need to begin the work of engaging them, educating them, and putting in place systems now. Because after the earthquake isn't the time to say, oh my gosh, they might be more vulnerable. How do we help? We need to be working with this idea in mind. So we're doing that, both responding to current need and future concerns, along with Maiti Nepal. And then in the earthquake, we don't know yet how many people suffered disabling injuries. But we know in general that there are over 500,000 Nepalis who every day face life with physical challenges. Unfortunately, in the society, there are not the mechanisms. There's no Disabilities Act to ensure handicapped access. There isn't the degree of awareness and focus that we have developed in our own society, where our economy is richer, we've got a lot of different things going for us. But I talked with a young woman last March in Nepal who was in a wheelchair. This young woman is bright and capable and wants to contribute to her society, but she said, Ambassador, if I go out in the morning, I can't go to a bathroom again until I come home at night. It can be 12 hours, it can be 14 hours. There's no place I can go in my wheelchair. And she said, do you know how humiliating it is if you soil yourself in public? And we know we can't afford to lose the abilities of these folks to the society that needs so much help as it grows. So we are doing the Wounded Heroes Trek of Hope. And this relates on a number of levels, Maeve. On the one hand, it's about tourism. We've got a group of 10 Americans. We've got an Army Sergeant, Stefan Leroy, who lost both legs in Afghanistan. We have a young woman, an Army intelligence officer, who lost her left leg in a very tragic motorcycle accident. We have a woman who lost, Adrienne Haslett-Davis, who lost her left leg in the Boston Marathon bombing. She was a ballroom dancer. Now, before we mourn too much for these folks, let me say that Stefan Leroy, the double amputee, today he's running marathons. The Army intelligence officer, Anna Mancias, won gold medals for the U.S. in the Invictus Games. And Adrienne is not only dancing again, but she just climbed to 19,000 feet in Ecuador. These folks demonstrate that they aren't going to be defined by what they're missing, but rather by what they have in their hearts, their strength, their courage, their will, their determination. And to us, they're the perfect reflection of the people of Nepal, who bring that same strength and courage and determination and resilience to every day as they seek to recover from an earthquake, from a political blockade, from grinding poverty. They carry on. So our wounded heroes not only are part of our narrative about Nepal, but they also will inspire and empower many of the Nepalese with disabilities. And as we do this, if we can show both that Nepal is accessible for anyone, we can tap into this a tourism market that the UN has pegged at about 1 billion people who with disabilities who want to travel, and that's a good thing too. And the UN has blessed this program. We're part of the World Tourism Organization effort for tourism for all with the Wounded Heroes Trek, and that is good. But we want to build upon this to bring mobility resource centers to Nepal next year, and we're working with the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago to do that. We hope to create a tourism academy focused on inclusive tourism and have the opportunity for people with disabilities in Nepal to be part of that program and part of that industry. We want people in Nepal to see the difference that folks can make, even if they are facing physical handicaps, and to find ways to bring them more fully into society. We alone aren't going to transform everything, but we can begin a process. We can help to make a difference. And I believe our wounded heroes, as our ambassadors and as role models and as figures of courage and inspiration, will help us to do that. I believe that the work that we do with children, the work that we do to prevent trafficking, the work that we do to help build safe homes, all of these things are part of the equation. And we're doing more, much more than that. But it's a constant struggle. And as a relatively new foundation, we are working hard to build our base. We were created before the earthquakes hit Nepal. Yeah, we weren't created because of the quakes. We were created before with the idea that we had to begin the work of preparedness. But the quakes hit very shortly after the foundation was created. But we were there before, and we're, as you said at the outset, many folks have already moved on. A new disaster occurs, but we aren't moving on. We remain committed to Nepal. And listen, there's a lot of challenges in the world today, and there are a lot of places where we can contribute and make a difference. But for us, we have chosen Nepal, and that's where we hope we can help people to build that better future, that future that they can face with hope rather than fear. So that's what we're doing.
Well, there will be a fundraising event happening here in Boulder on August 26th. There's going to be a concert and a variety of different things. And so how do we keep communities like the one in Boulder and Denver, or just the broader community, particularly in the developed nations, how do we keep them engaged with these issues long after they have, you know, gone from the front page? And, you know, also we're dealing with compassion fatigue in many ways. There are so many causes that need our support. How do we keep this as a relevant cause that people can still pay attention to and still support?
Well, you know, that's the tricky question. And I don't know that I know the answer, Maeve. I've been doing this for about 7-8 months. I retired on November 30th. On December 1st, I said, fine, let's do something. Yeah, let's remain committed to this idea of service. And it's finding that within that community, and I know there's compassion fatigue, and I know there's these constant requests for help. But for me, I served our country for 34 years as a diplomat. I didn't join out of a sense of service. I joined because I was a young man looking for work. But very quickly, you realize that it was about service, both to our nation and to a broader set of values that we believe in, that you believe in basic human dignity, that people should be able to live productive lives within their society, to contribute, to be respected, to have their voices heard. This is what we believe in as Americans, and this is what I would offer folks as an ambassador, as we talked about why we engaged and why we care. And I believe there are many Americans who do care and who want to still make a difference. And it brings such power to our own lives if we find those things that we can care about and know that we can touch lives and help to make this world a little bit better. And I know we can't do that every day, that we're busy with our jobs and our families and our other responsibilities. But through engagement with an organization like SOARway, and it doesn't have to be SOARway, but I'd be happy if it is, we can still find ways to help and to just have something that we care about enough to say, yes, this year I'm going to make a contribution. This year I'm going to volunteer. This year I'll buy a ticket and come to this concert because it's going to go to a good cause. We can't all give our lives full bore every day to trying to correct injustice in the world or help to bring about a better society. But we also can't, no matter how tired we may be, how frustrated we may be, we just can't turn our backs on the world either. We are part of this, and we are a very fortunate nation. And I've seen this after 34 years of living in many, many different countries, seen the great challenges that the world faces. We have been blessed as a nation, and we are a generous and compassionate people, and we have done so much good. But we need to continue to play that role if we want to build the future for the planet that we seek. So I don't know how to keep everyone engaged. We try to find different programs that will encourage giving. We try to find things that people will enjoy, too, like this event that's coming up in Boulder, this concert that we're going to be hosting. It's going to be a wonderful performance. And so even if people don't necessarily care about Nepal, if they want a tremendous musical experience, I hope they're going to come out for the show, because the show itself is incredible. And I will tell you, I've been with the group. We've done 4 performances so far. And the response has been just fantastic. People get so engaged in the music. They get drawn in. I've seen people up and dancing and whistling and cheering. And this isn't just the Nepalese. And in fact, just the other day in Pittsburgh, we had a great show with a tremendous, very diverse audience. And for the non-Nepalese, it was an uplifting experience, musical experience. This is not your typical Eastern music. Some people, I think, sometimes think of a sitar playing a raga that goes on for 35 minutes and that sounds all the same to them after a while. This is not that. This is rich. It's dynamic. It just, as I say, it's music that draws you in. And yeah, we've got a great tabla player, flute, guitar, and sitar, and the dynamic between the musicians is incredible. And these are indeed, these are world class musicians. They are just so talented, and it's a fun show. And I look forward to seeing a lot of folks in Boulder at the event.